Spencer again. Intercepted. Mortlock.
Goes for the right foot. Na-na-na.
Whatever you're thinking, Mr. Video Referee, don't you dare take that off him.
It's the Jane. Corey Jane. Sweet as a nut.
There's a problem. Not for Yagi. There's not. He scores.
All over the top of the wood.
G'day folks, and welcome to Gumnut Sports, your weekly shot of sporting penicillin injected straight into the ear to cure your latest referee-related infection. My name is not Tom, who the keen-eared among you will have noted is not here. We had an argument last week. He is now missing. Please come back. Your family loves you. But rather, I am Jack Spicer, your humble non-missing union correspondent. With me today, folks, is the equally non-missing correspondent of Rugby League and filling in for AFL, a man known for big hits, big fun and big jokes, Mr. Joseph Wimberger. How are you, sir?
Yeah, pretty good, thank you. I mean, Tommy's away. He usually covers AFL. AFL is a football code. Rugby league is a football code. How hard can it be?
How hard can it be indeed? And as well with us, the insane integral, the diabolical derivative, the evil equation himself, Mr. Fisho Fish. What is the word, Fisho?
Oh, thanks, Tom. And, you know, looking at sports outside of the borders here, it's been a pretty depressing week, and I'll unfortunately have to elaborate in the breakdown.
Excellent. The fact that you call me That's Tom it. Made me laugh.
It's been a long day.
How was that, Sam?
Yeah, it was a bit like losing your virginity. It wasn't very nice, but we got the job done.
The breakdown.
It's been another ripper week in the Australian and international sporting landscape, and as a result, we've got a lot of jokes. To enthrall us with the footy report, here is Mr. Joseph Wimberger.
Thank you very much. Please never say my full name on this podcast again. So, Tom is obviously away. He's, for those who don't know, at the Sports Podcast Conference in Portugal. So, this is going to be a big old footy report covering both of the glorious codes. Now, number one, Origin, obviously on the radar for you blokes and most of the leagueies out there this Wednesday. I did contemplate not mentioning it because I didn't want to jinx it. But I want to ask you guys, first of all, as you know, genuine feral Queenslanders, there is a potential that we lose this one. And, I mean, it's all very well to say, you know, oh, eight in a row, blah, blah, blah. But if Queensland does lose this one, if New South Wales comes out with a glorious victory, what does that mean in the grand scheme of things?
Like, I just think that, you know, it's going to be a bit of a lean period for a few years. We have to blood a few new people, bring them up, and New South Wales are going to unfortunately have some success.
Yeah, look, that's fine, but can I answer your question with another question? And that question is, there are only two more weeks of this podcast, this week and next week, before you never ever in your entire life have to speak about Origin ever again this year. How does it feel?
How do you feel about that?
I actually already thought about this because I'm definitely going to run out of material. So I went out and I had a look at state of origins for other sports. All right. So definitely exists for field hockey, definitely exists for beach volleyball. Maybe exists for handball? Maybe we can ask our mates.
Didn't Caleb Gain said something?
Yeah. I think he did. I think beach handball could be a good contender for us. So any beach sport that has an origin.
You actually play it on up at the Tweed, and the halfway line is the borderline between the two states.
In season two of Gumnut Sports, we're not even going to have individual sports reports. We're going to have It's the Origin Report. Which sport was in state of origin this week?
Okay, so we have sorted out Origin, but what this means is we have to talk about the boring stuff, which is the season proper. Footy report, Newcastle Knights still bad, but guys, I want to talk about the situation with the wooden spoon. Now, the Knights would probably be the unluckiest side in the last 2 years, and you know what? They still can't take a trick. Poor old Knights were definitely the better team on the weekend for at least 76 minutes against the Bulldogs. But then there were two tries in 4 minutes and a missed penalty goal just after the kickoff, which ruined their afternoon. Now, it's one of those scenarios where it's a team that, you know, looks good for you know, most of the game. They do everything in their power to win. And just when you think you're going to get a result, something amazing happens and they give up the lead and let their opposition back into it.
Is it just me? I may have seen this. Is this the shank? Is this the guy that was responsible for the worst shank in the history of sport?
Oh, yeah, his boot deserted him. His boot unlaced itself.
It went briefly missing.
Exactly. So it was absolutely shocking.
It joined Tom at the sports podcast recruitment. It runs a podcast for boots.
The boot podcast. So there is hope, though, for the Knights. And the reason I say there is hope is because they could still get off the bottom of the table.
Tell me how, Joe. Tell me how.
So fuck the premiership. Look, I'm not even following those teams anymore. I just want to see the Knights get off the bottom of the table. That's what I'm backing. It's the ultimate underdog tale. Let me tell you a story about the Knights. So last year, Newcastle, bottom of the table, one win, one draw, 22 losses, two byes for a total of 7 points. So more points accrued from bye rounds than wins.
Wins or draws.
Correct. Very, very sad. But
we've got the number in front of us. A score differential of 495 points.
That's rough.
In arrears, I should add.
It is not pretty viewing, but these are the 2017 Knights this year. Those numbers were for 2016. This year they are trying, and I think they are genuinely getting unlucky. So I'm optimistic. I think that they have a difficult run. Run home. They've got to win two more games, though, but it will have to come down to a points differential.
Yeah, the nonnas of Leichhardt will have to be providing their wooden spoons to the team, serving up some good old-fashioned humble spaghetti.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, exactly. Exactly right. Now, on to the AFL, the other sport with a funny-shaped ball. Now, I also want to talk about the ladder. What I want to talk about, though, is point separation. We've talked so far this season about how much of a crazy ladder it's been for the AFL, not much separating each team. And I guess to underscore this, we've looked at the stats, and now there are 8 points separating fourth and eighth, exactly the same as in the rugby league. But since you get 4 points per win in the AFL and only two in the league, the AFL competition is that much closer. You know, it really reflects how the season has gone so far.
I just saw the Swannies. They're in seventh, but they're one win off fourth. It's and they lost their first six, but they have now, admittedly, won seven of their last eight, but that's fine.
Yeah,
exactly. I mean, we say how nice it would be for a finals season without Hawthorn, but the option is always there. And I guess my question to you guys is, it feels like there's more sustained power year to year in NRL club success, whereas at least this year in the AFL, it's much more of a mixed bag. Like, what's going on?
So my guess would be a couple of things. One, the fact you can trade players. So firstly, like in the league, you can lock in four or five players on a few multi-year contracts and you're fine. In AFL, I mean, I suppose you have some discretion in there, but players can then request a trade and get out of their contracts. So nothing's a sure thing. I also think that if the governing body is to gut 17 of the teams to prop up Greater Western Sydney, that's going to bring them all back down to a level playing field pretty quickly.
I should add, though, like this year, I think within the AFL, it is the aberration. When you think about every other, it's a shocker, right? Like, in the NRL, we look at teams like Melbourne. Cronulla's got a bit of a thing going on. Brisbane's always a contender. The AFL is exactly the same. It's just this year's been a bit fucking weird. Like, Sydney's made the final three of the last 5 years. Hawthorn won three straight and then just decided they didn't feel like playing this season, which I think is fair enough. Sometimes you want a break, sometimes you want to cuddle, but they're coming back. They just didn't want to play the first half of the season. Even the Brisbane Lions, when they won, you know, they won three straight. They got to the grand final for the fourth time round, lost to Port Adelaide. Don't know how you lose to Port Adelaide. Teams are still doing it. AFL is a perplexing sport.
Yeah, look, that's interesting, but you're actually both wrong. You're wrong. You're wrong, wrong, wrong. What it is the law of large numbers.
Oh, God. That's why you were asking me about it on the weekend.
Exactly, because I knew I had to nunch these crumbers. Now,
Fisho, there's no such thing as social mathematics.
Fisho, how many AFL teams are there?
18.
And how many players per squad? It's 45. You're wrong. Okay, so now, by my math, that's about 800 odd players.
810, yes.
Yes. So even with the draft, all right, to sort out the weirdos, you're going to end up with a couple of fuck-ups. Now, I'm not talking about the entire Richmond team. Sorry, boys, if you're listening. But you're going to end up with some Tom Bugs, if you will.
Of course, our man Tom Bug, the recognisable shit bloke himself, got a cheeky 6 weeks. Last week, pretty good areas from the MRP, but probably reckon the mums would have given him more. What do we think, boys?
So the Oz kick mums, is that what we're saying?
I think so.
Yeah, they've given... I mean, Callum Mills looks really young, so they can probably empathise with their own son getting punched.
Exactly. So, yeah. So we're thinking, what, mums, life ban?
Yeah, about that, you know, at least a season.
I think that there would be one among them who would be highly understanding because her son got a life ban about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
But in this instance, definitely the equivalent of stealing from the tuck shop. Not on.
Oh, stealing from the tucky. I guess stealing from the tuck shop is like a coward punch kind of offence. I guess your jumper punch offence would be more of a brown onions.
Yeah, as in what you mean, like when you put your avocados through as brown onions in the self-checkout.
Exactly right. Yeah. I mean, I'm not punching you. I'm just punching you, but using the jumper.
It's what we call a socially acceptable crime, where in the scenario that the law that's in place is actually wrong.
So you're saying it's a victimless crime?
So you're saying jumper punches should be allowed?
Correct.
Okay.
And that is the AFL news. See, Tom, this was easy.
Well done, Joe. You demonstrated. I'll give you a 7.5 out of 10 for passable knowledge and good jokes. I'll kick off next. And boyos, let me give you a list of why rugby union is the game they play in heaven, the greatest sport in the world. And the answer, of course, is jerseys that are red in colour. Yes, this week alone, I have two pieces of good news to report. Firstly, the Reds have squelched past the Brumbies, and the Lions have wrestled the All Blacks to an honourable draw. End of list. Yes, it was an absolutely ripper weekend of rugby union, and it started on Friday night, where the Reds, disappointing all season, have pulled off a heist, taking down the top of the conference Brumbies, a feat they'd previously only achieved 5 times in the history of Super Rugby. This is admittedly not surprising, because we have been rubbish for about 3/5 of the entire competition, but on a cold, wet night in Brisbane at a Suncorp stadium that was so foggy it looked like a Robbie Williams concert, the men in red came away with a 1-point win. It was a genius.
I think this is typical Reds, because they tended to do like the good things in the dark. They're like weird mushrooms. People feed them shit and keep them in the dark, and that's where they really grow. No, really, because when people are looking at them, when it's like the Waratahs game or, you know, a big game against the Crusaders or whatever, they usually just drop their bundle, cack their dacks, and it's all over Red Rover. But this game I was watching, it was actually quite satisfying.
Yeah, look, it was a pretty terrific night all around. Next on Saturday, the Lions and the All Blacks have played out a 15-all draw as the combined might of 71 million people came together to almost beat a small island somewhere near Australia. Now, blokes, this was ingenious from the Northern Hemisphere. We had the three most annoying, worstest, whomsteaded, nitpicky referees in charge of this game, with Roman Poit on the field and Jerome Garces and Jaco Piper, a South African in French clothing, if there ever was one, which meant that the All Blacks never stood a chance of playing their usual basketball shenanigans. In the end, it had to be that the game was decided by Roman, who called a penalty for offside, then spoke to the TMO, agreed it remained offside, then changed his mind on a 20-metre walk back to the mark, where he changed it to an accidental offside, which union rule savants will recognise is a scrum, not a penalty. The Lions then held out the Blacks and celebrated like people who'd won a game. I should note that they did not.
Yeah. So what you're telling me is the entire series was a collapsed scrum.
You could argue that it did come down to a collapsed scrum. It could come down to the fact that the All Blacks dropped a lot of ball, but in most incidences, it's because Sonny Bill Williams didn't play. Australian rugby is a New South Wales boys club news now. And fellas, over the weekend, the schoolboy championships were held. For those unfamiliar, Queensland and New South Wales get 2 teams each. Victoria, Western Australia and the ACT get 1. And then there's a combined states team from Tassie, the NT and SA. Something along the lines we have discussed and mooted for the AFL State of Origin. But fellas, the really surprising thing is here, the ACT have run out winners with Queensland 2 second, Queensland 1 third, and New South Wales suffering an ignominious 4th and 6th respectively. Oof. Now, following that came the selection of the Australian schoolboys team.
Oh,
now,
no.
Based on the way that I intro'd this segment, I'm sure you can imagine what's happened, but I'm going to tell you anyway. It is a performance emulating the Waratahs' cousins, with underperformance rewarded with selection. 11 of 20 spots went to New South Wales boys. The ACT, the winners of the competition, got 2. Queensland have 6 spots, while Western Australia has 1, which I probably think is about proportional. Fellas, it is a damn disgrace. What do we think?
What's ignominious?
Ignominious means terrible and disgraceful and also bad. Lastly, in Super Rugby is a fucking stupid behemoth that no one can work out a cut down news now. Two teams have been cut from the South African Conference with the Kings and Cheetahs axe. Now, reports have actually suggested that they will potentially be moving into the Pro 12, the Welsh, Italian, Scottish and Irish competition. And you can see the appeal. It's just a 14-hour flight from South Africa. I'm serious why it's appealing. It's just a 14-hour flight and you're in basically the same time zone. Alternately, you could actually drive the team bus there with the journey from Port Elizabeth to Cardiff going through South Africa, Botswana, Zambia, the Congo, the bad one. The Central African Republic, also bad. Chad, Nigeria, Niger, Algeria, Spain, France, England, and Wales, and would take just 193 hours. You could then drive back to be there in time for your next home game.
Yeah.
Now, that, Gumnutters, is the rugby news this week.
Excellent, excellent, Jack. That was very good. Now we all know what ignominious means. Of course, rounding out the breakdown, it is other sports. Let's ask the man with the head what's happening in non-foot-related balls. Fisho.
Thank you, Joe. And look, there's no way to sugarcoat it. It's been a bit grim for the Aussies over the last week, so we'll dive right in. Starting with the cricket and...
Australian sport is always in crisis. It's genius.
Shots have been fired in the pay dispute. Firstly, with Cricket Australia cancelling the Australia A tour of South Africa. And then today, Mitchell Starc going out and signing with a rival sponsor.
To be fair, if you're Mitchell Starc, you can afford to buy an Audi, so I would do the same thing.
Yeah, so to fill in, Mitchell Starc has signed a sponsorship deal with Audi. Audi is a rival of Toyota, who's one of Cricket Australia's protected sponsors. In addition to this, the Australian Cricketers Association, which is the players' union, is trying to sign more sponsorship deals for players, but they're trying to sign literally anyone. They don't care if they're a Cricket Australia protected sponsor or a rival. They're basically trying to undercut the governing body in this. Boys, what do we make of this whole situation?
Yeah, look, boys, we've talked about this on before on the unaired tapes, and if Mitchell Starc wants to wear a pair of Connies when he plays cricket in the future, then you should let him. It's a stupid decision. It doesn't matter if they're sponsored by Nike or Adidas or Reebok or Birkenstocks.
Query for you guys. Do you reckon that sponsors would go for it if they had both like a Toyota logo and an Audi logo next to each other on the shirt?
I actually think that like you get the sole sponsorship of the jersey, and I understand the importance of doing this, but like... does it really change anything? Like, do people believe that, like, if say Nissan became the sponsor, do you reckon people would just believe that, oh, yep, you know what, the Australian cricket team does drive a Nissan?
Yeah, look, Jack, that's a great point. But Australian cricket is known more for driving balls through the covers than for driving cars. Thank you to the late Richie Benaud for helping to prove that point.
Yep. Serious question, though, then. Why aren't people that make buses sponsoring the team bus? This is what it should be. They use it more often. So, like, Mercedes-Benz, who makes buses, should be sponsoring the Australian cricket team to get more people to buy buses. Like, and you get international exposure. Like, it's government. Your target audience is governments, and everyone knows they don't work after five. They're watching cricket.
Wait a second. So what you're saying is bus companies should sponsor team buses, and then car companies should be the bat sponsors. Because they're the ones doing the driving.
As usual, we've cracked it.
Well done.
What's next, Fisher?
All right. I can't work.
All right.
I had a joke, but I can't work it in now, we'll move along.
You have to do the abandoned joke. It sucks. All right.
I'd say things are not going much better on the cricket pitch as the women's team suffered a 3-run loss to England overnight, so missing a chance to secure a spot in their semis of the Women's Cricket World Cup.
Are they not playing India Wednesday?
If they win that, they secure their spot. And even if they lose that, if other results go their way, they should be fine. But they could have locked it in this week.
Yeah, they've only lost one, right? That's the
first
game.
They have only lost one. It sort of fits with the doom and gloom theme, though, if I work with it.
Is everyone else just garbage in that competition?
Yeah, so there's a real problem with women's cricket where it's Australia. It's like, you know how international rugby in the men's is New Zealand, England, everyone else? Women's cricket is Australia, England, everyone else.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Good.
Yeah, exactly. All right, and we'll move along to the tennis. And for the first only second time since 1938, no Australian man has made the second round of Wimbledon. So headlining this was Nick Kyrgios, who was out before the hour mark. So, you know, if you watched a game of an episode of Game of Thrones, that goes longer.
Gumnut fans will also realize that, unfortunately, in tennis, it's better to last longer as opposed to in running, where it's better to be quicker. Back to you, Fisher.
Thank you for that insight, Jack.
How do you know that?
It's actually rule 47B of tennis.
Okay,
this is not running.
I'm going to move this back onto the rails after going off them.
Good.
So despite that, the worst performance of the round had to go to Bernard Tomic, who, after losing in three sets to Misha Zverev in the first round, announced that he was bored during his game. This understandably drew a lot of ire from fans and previous tennis players alike, at which point Tomic, rather than repent or something, doubled down and said, "Oh, you haters, you can only dream of what I have," which I imagine is daddy issues and no one's dreaming of that.
To be fair to fucking Bernie Tomic, though, have you ever hit 7 forehands in a row? It's not very interesting after about number 4.
Yeah, but he's earned $7 million. And $1 million a forehand, I would hit 7 in a row.
Yeah, and he has a stupid head.
He does have a stupid head. He has a very stupid head. And so the tennis world is completely rallied against Bernard. Even his own father, the notorious John...
That's almost Freudian.
John Tomic has come out and said even he's ashamed of Bernard. So you know things are going badly.
But to be fair, Bernard's ashamed of him. So like that counts. But that cuts both ways.
And finally, moving along into the cycling, and pre-race favourite Australian Richie Porte has in the last week gone from disappointing to better to looking pretty good to out of the Tour de France.
Sounds like a summary of Australian sport.
Basically,
we wish him well.
Yep, we do wish him well. And the tour organisers are now coming under criticism for the high number of crashes this year, with many people saying they've set the courses too dangerous.
Too dangerous? It's only riding a bike. Anyone can do it.
Yeah, I can get back on a bike, having not ridden a bike for 20 years, and I don't fall off.
You guys realize, so Richie Porte was going at 72.5 kilometers an hour when he crashed, right?
Why didn't he use his brakes?
And with that, that's other sports for this week.
There's got to be an investigation into this. This has got to be... Someone's got to be accountable for this. Were they the best referees we've got? I don't get it.
Going upstairs.
Folks, Australian sport, as mentioned, is in perpetual crisis. And by Australian sport, we mean the dynamic duo of rugby and rugby league. Crowd numbers are in decline, the atmosphere is fucking shit, and the last time someone sang Waltzing Matilda at a Wallabies game, I could remember what the Bledisloe Cup was for. Meanwhile, south of the Barassi line, the AFL looks set to have its best ever season in terms of viewers and attendees. That's why this week, the Gumnut TMO is investigating how do we put the magic back into going to a game of footy. To start off with, fellas, why do we think we're struggling to attract spectators?
Look, it's an easy one. It's food prices. It is. It's food prices. Games are usually broadcast and played during dinner time. I know from our experience, we get out there. I'm happy to pay for a ticket to the game, whatever. But then I get in there, and the only thing I can afford is a 4-20. There's nothing wrong with a 4-20. Other brands are available.
Yeah.
But everything is bloody $11. $11 for chicken tenders. It's not on.
Yeah, exactly. It's $11 not for the meal, but for just part of it. So to get the chips as well, you're pushing up to 15.
Exactly. So I've paid my ticket price. I've got in there. And by the time I've got a beer and food and spent about $40, I've missed a quarter of the game.
Can I ask you, Joe, what strength is that beer?
You know what? It's mid-strength beer.
It's mid-strength beer, and they're selling it to you for a full-strength beer price.
It's mid-strength beer for middle-aged men, and it's not on. We talked about this the other week, though, with the Scotland game, which ironically the Wallabies did end up losing. But the ARU, in my point of view, fucked up again by trying to make me pay $70 for what is just simply not a premium product. Now, when you add on the $70 plus the 7 beers I'll need to drink to deal with the fact that we're going to lose the game, plus the fact that I'm going to want to have probably a hot dog, I'm going to get dehydrated because I eat the chips, and also I'm going to want at least 2 4-and-20s, suddenly my total cost of the evening has gone to $150. Why wouldn't I just go to the BP across the road, buy myself a thing there, buy a case of beer, and then pass out with sadness? No more problems. What
also,
do we think?
You can pass out on your thing, on your couch, not wearing a collar. You have to wear a collar to get into the members area.
Oh, it's just a damn disgrace. Yeah. It's like, not on.
Like, on that point, so recently I was looking at, so my dad and one of his friends were looking at going to the Brisbane Bledisloe, and we were looking at it. And they said, nah, we're not going to pay. The silver's 130. It's too expensive. Now, my dad's mate's like a partner in a corporate law firm. If he's saying the Wallabies are too expensive, they're bloody too expensive.
Well, it's not just saying they're too expensive. It's just saying that the value proposition just isn't there. You're basically going, I'm going to pay $130 to go to Suncorp Stadium and presumably watch the Wallabies lose by 16 points, considering we haven't beaten them since 2015. And before that, we hadn't beaten them since 2011. And before that, we hadn't beaten them since probably 2010. And before that, we hadn't beaten them since 2008. It's not on.
So winning definitely plays a part. Obviously, you don't want to go and see your team lose every week. But surely you've got AFL games, which are, for all intents and purposes, dead rubbers with, you know, these local derbies. How do they still get so many attendees with their bums on the seats?
I think so. They've just got a bit more of the history and the built-in. It's the built-in rivalries are what sustain it. So I went to the opening game of the AFL this year, and it was Carlton Richmond at the G. Now, Richmond are doing better than expected this year. They came 15th last year. Carlton are like 16th this year. It was a Thursday night, and there were 77,000 people. And that's just built, you know what? It's built on hatred. It's built on just hatred of the other team.
Are you saying there's not enough hatred in rugby league?
There's definitely not enough in union. League, yeah, that's a weird, that's a different question.
I'm not sure. I do always come back to like the Greg Martin getting really upset after a New South Wales Queensland game. And he's like, why aren't they punching each other at the end of the game? And they're all just like standing around, like shaking hands, being like, you want to go to Fridays? Oh, yeah, all right.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's definitely most of the point, because when they're, you know, doing the lead up to the game and the pre-game and whatever, they always show a little bit of the stoush to try and kind of get people a little bit angry, get the angry juice going. Actually, great point, me. Do they serve pre-mixed rum at the footy?
I think they do. Yeah, they do.
But look, related to this, guys, is once you get people into the stadium after we drop the price of the pie by a dollar and we introduce the fight juice once we're in there, how do we get the atmosphere going? Because God knows you can go to a Wallabies game and it'll be full and no one is making a sound. Why do we think this is?
Lack of beach balls. Think about it. You're at the cricket each summer. The beach ball goes up. Everyone around gets excited. Second, the beach ball goes over the fence. Everyone gets noisy and then it quiets right down.
You know what I think this is?
What?
It's because the Wallabies have too many syllables. Now let's look at this.
Okay.
No, All Blacks.
That's a good point.
All Blacks.
Then Lions?
Lions. Maybe a stretch to be two syllables, but
Spring
it's under two.
Springboks.
Yep.
Springboks.
Wheels. Works.
Exactly.
Wallaby. Three syllables. Yeah. I've already lost interest by the time I'm halfway through the second one. I'm not gonna shout that. Why would I scream it?
Yeah. So are you saying it's more of a rebrand for the old war cry?
It is a rebrand for the Wallabies. We're no longer be called the Wallabies. We need to be called like the Quails or the Wombats. How good would it be the Wombats? That would be excellent.
Oh yeah, and you don't mess with the Wombat. They're absolutely vicious. That's a better mascot than the Wallaby, which is just like the cuddliest thing in the world.
Oh, and we can call our special fan zone the Pouch.
Oh yes.
Is it the
Pouch? That'd be the Wallabies. Surely Wallabies are more of a pouch than a Wombat.
Wait, they are both marsupials.
The Burrow.
Okay, they are both marsupials. Okay. We'll call it the Burrow.
Yeah.
That's good. And the last question I have for you boys is, other than these villainous rivalries that they have going on, what do we think the AFL is doing right?
Easy. That's a really easy one. It's meatloaf.
Right, as in the failed entertainment at the grand final.
No, they actually serve meatloaf.
What year did they get meatloaf into the grand final pre-match?
2011, was it?
Because that was hilarious. And ever since then, I've kind of been like, oh yeah, the AFL, they're willing to have a laugh, because surely they knew when they got him that it would be an absolute clusterfuck.
Okay, so say you're doing the halftime entertainment for Bledisloe 1 in Sydney in August. Who are you getting as the halftime entertainment?
Keith Urban, clearly.
I'm getting Bert Newton to do stand-up.
Well, because all the private school mums will be like, oh, that's the guy from 20 to 1.
He's just doing an episode of 20 to 1 live. It's the first sellout the Wallabies have had in years.
Yes, of course, 20 to 1.
20 to 1, Wallabies disappointing performances against the All Blacks.
Best Joe Roth tries from an era when we actually used to win.
So we did 20 to 1 of best Wallabies tries, but we have to cut it off at number 5 because we've run out. I was going to ask, fellas, do we, just as a slightly left of field option, do we take inspiration from they who must not be named, the football fans? Do we take inspiration to them, and do we introduce legal flares at Wallabies games?
I don't know. Like,
that is not a serious question. Okay. The way that you're responding to it is really confusing. Okay. You're like, I'm just really thinking hard about whether we should legalise flares. Okay, okay. The answer to that is generally no.
Okay. No, a beach ball is the thinking man's flare.
Yeah, that's true.
Because it gets you a bit of attention and it's fun to light, but in this case, blow up.
Yeah.
And everyone can share it around.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, so just to summarise then, what we're going to do is we're going to change the name of the Wallabies to the Wombats. We're going to ignore league because we didn't feel like talking about it very much. We're going to reduce the price of a meat pie to below, what do you reckon, below $4, below $5?
$3. $3 for a pie.
Fisho, ambitious. With 2 gold coins, Fisho wants a pie.
With three if you're down at halftime because you need a pie to drown the sorrow.
Yes.
All right, there you have it, gum nutters. We have put the magic back into going to games. Head along next time for an episode of 20 to 1 with Bert Newton at halftime.
Fisho's fact or fiction?
The man of mystery himself, the suspicious statistician, is here to once again bamboozle us with his fact or fiction. What do you have for us, Fisho?
Thank you, Jack. And before we go, I want to give a shout out to Ian Bray, who has liked our page while we are recording. So thanks, Ian. Thanks for the support.
Just right. Tweet in if you've got any questions, Ian.
At our fictional Twitter account. all right, so fact or fiction this week. And so I was looking at the Women's World Cup and I saw Australia have been dominating at it.
Is this in the cricket?
In the cricket, yes. Yep. And so I was looking back at history and something caught my eye. So fact or fiction, the Women's Cricket World Cup has been running longer than the men's.
Is it it's the one-day World Cup, yeah?
Yeah. It's like there's no women's other World Cup.
No, I feel like this is a trick. Wait, okay, because I'm thinking like 2020, like there's the longer format ones. This feels like a trick. I think it's a trick. Are you tricking?
So are you saying fiction?
Mm. Are you saying that the women's has not been running for longer than the men's?
I feel like it's a trick question and it has, but I have to be the schmuck and say fiction.
Okay, all right. Jazz game fiction.
I'm going to say that it's a fact because Fisho's got a shit-eating grin on his face. And also, I may or may not have read about this about 2 days ago, but
no! Okay, so Jack has gone fact, and he has let the cat out of the bag. It is, in fact, a fact. The first women's...
It's, in fact, a fact.
It is, in fact, a fact. The first Women's World Cup was in 1973, which was 2 years before the corresponding Men's World Cup.
And who won it?
I should know that. Okay.
Interesting fact while Fisho Googles that. So Belinda Clark, who was the long-serving captain of the Australian women's team, at one point was juggling a dual role. And that was, at the same time as being the captain of the women's cricket team, she was also the CEO of Women's Cricket Australia. Things have changed. Why isn't Meg Lanning the CEO of Women's Cricket Australia? Because she's a legend.
Well, I think that trumps even what I thought was the greatest gift of all, which was Elise Perry dual international.
I was going to say, if Elise Perry can do 2 jobs, surely she can just do a third.
Well, it's a good point. We'll have to start a Gum Nut Sports a petition on change.org to post to other local lefties just to make sure that everyone knows our position on the issue.
Yep, and just back on your thing, Jack, England won that first Women's World Cup.
Oh, I don't want to know about it then.
There goes Palmer, who picks it out of bounds on the full. How could anyone be that unco?
Gumnut of the Week.
Who will take home the prize more feared than the wooden spoon, than playing for the Tigers, than a post-match Michael Checker dressing room spray, than a shoey with Daniel Ricciardo? That's right, it's Gumnut of the Week. Who's up first?
I'll jump in. So I've gone to Wimbledon and I have gone Daniil Medvedev. Yes, he's a Russian tennis player. Beat Stan Wawrinka in the first round in a big upset. But that's
fuck really.
Yes, he did.
Huge
yes.
If true.
This could be dumb. Medvedev could be the Smith of Russia. Any relation to Dmitry Medvedev?
I don't know who Dmitry Medvedev is.
Fishai, can I just answer Joe's question with another statement that's unrelated to it and say that you're becoming quite the master of unusual names in your unusual in your other sports role.
Yes.
And I want to congratulate you for it. Your Eastern European is getting particularly good.
Thank you. This is after I tried to pronounce Tom's boxer in week one and failed miserably.
He's got away and practiced, Gumnutters. Yeah. That is the secret to all success, just yes. Like me hosting this, which will not probably ever happen again.
Yes. All right. So Medvedev, he's playing in the second round and he's gotten a bit unhappy at what the umpire's been calling. He got a point violation against him at one stage. So in the London Heat, when he's lost the match, he's gone shaking hands with his opponent, sat down at his bag and started throwing coins at the base of the umpire's chair as a method of protesting the decision.
Methinks the player doth protest too much. Yes. How much money did he throw?
I don't know. It was just, it said coins, so plural. And when asked about it later, he's like, I don't know. I did a bad thing. I just saw my wallet in my bag and just snapped.
Oh, for God's sake.
Who just starts throwing money at someone you dislike? So for picking the worst way to express your disdain at an umpire, I'm going with Daniil Medvedev of Russia.
That's probably a good time for me to jump in. Look, fellas, it pains me to do this, but unfortunately this is so gumnuttable that it absolutely must be done. This week's gumnut for me is a dearly loved cricketer, one William Laurie, who in describing Ian Chappell at a Channel 9 Ashes launch said the following. He went to Prince Alfred College. Hang on, let me see if I can do a Bill Laurie. Yes. He went to Prince Alfred College, where all the great cricketers from South Australia went to, and of course all majored in knitting and crocheting. They were all a pack of poofters. It was shocking. Upon noticing that the mood had somewhat soured, he then said, sorry, girls. I do note that Corey Bernardi has congratulated him for his comments.
Oh, no.
Saying that it's good to hear something that was commonplace about 30 years ago on the football field. So for an absolute shocker of a line and then being so immediately and well backed up by Corey Bernardi, unfortunately it pains me to do it, but Bill Laurie has to be the gumnut of the week.
God, that is... Tell you what, that is a tough little nut to crack, but I'm up here swinging from the branches high up in the eucalypt fronds. And my gumnut is actually one you've already mentioned, Fisho. It is the big man, Bernard Tomic. So what he's done, just to reiterate, is he's come out in a press conference after a really lackluster performance, basically told everyone he's bored and then said, it doesn't matter because I have heaps of money. So it doesn't matter that Tennis Australia has paid him since he was about 13. It doesn't matter about sponsors. It doesn't matter about anything. He said he's bored. This is so bad, in fact, that his dad, who is maybe a bigger flog than him, or so I thought, has basically berated him for it. And you know what? I think that the analogy here is basically you going to all your clients, you know what? I'm bored. I hate you. But also you're going to give me all of your money.
I'm bored and I hate you, but it's okay because you pay me.
Exactly. So I think just for taking flog lordiness to an extracurricular level, it's got to be the big man, Bernard Tomic.
Yep. All right. So I'll kick us off with the voting. Bernard was on my shortlist, so I'm going to go with Bernard. I think my favorite thing is he said to all the haters who've criticized me, you can only dream of what I have. One of those haters was Martina Navratilova, who's won 9 Wimbledons and 18 Grand Slams in total, was voted as the greatest female tennis player between 1975 and 2005. I'm fairly sure Bernard, no matter how bored he is, he's dreaming of what she has, not the other way around.
Fisho, serious question. Was it my Bill Laurie voice that turned you off voting for me?
That was a factor, yes.
It's a disaster. I'm voting for Fisho just to make him feel bad, but also it's pretty funny throwing coins at things.
Yeah.
Oh, no. I really want to vote for Jack because he did a voice. But I realise if I vote for him, then it's a tie. And I don't want to have to call Dave. So, Fisho.
Oh, my God. Is it happening?
I'm actually going to vote
for you. Is it happening? Yes!
But,
oh.
It doesn't count.
Why not?
Because we don't have a full voting conglomerate here.
No, Paul. I'm sorry.
I can say that as the moderator of today's discussion, you can all go and have a water. No, it doesn't count. Good.
Okay, let's back up. Let's back up a second. Right.
Thank you.
Can I appeal this? Can I appeal this decision?
That's this week's episode of Gum Nut Sports. Call a mate or mate a call.
Turn off my microphone.
Visit a website. Swing us a like on our Facebook page or follow us on SoundCloud. And from my fellow Master Blaster sportscasters, thanks for listening. We have been Gum Nut Sports and good night.
Master Blaster sportscaster.